I think we're going to kick off. I'm Stacey Meadwell. I'm the National Insector Editor of EG. And this session is, we're going to be looking at London's position as a global gateway to retail, looking at what makes it such a draw, what challenges lie ahead, how the industry is facing those challenges. I'm going to introduce my panelists. You'll notice that we're one down. Unfortunately, Stephen Spencer of Lululemon Athletica couldn't make it, but we're still going to make it, hopefully, an interesting discussion. And we'll be taking questions from the floor. We can wait to the end, but if there is something, you do have a burning question as we're going along, do pop your hand up and we can always stop and ask that question. Okay, I'm going to introduce my panelists now. We've got our man with the numbers, which is Andrew Phipps, who's the head of retail research at CBRE. Then we've got our landlord developer, who is Joanna Lee, director of retail and restaurants at Grosvenor. And then representing agency and also retailers in Stephen's absence is Eric Eastman, who's executive director of Central London Retail, CBRE. Andrew's going to kick off with a presentation just to set the scene for the retail market in London.
Thank you. This is a very short presentation. I was given 8 minutes, which is normally when I just get sort of warmed up. So I'll rattle through it fairly quickly, and we'll get to the experts to hear their thoughts. So it's a pretty easy title to address, really. So London is the global gateway for retail, and hopefully I'll convince you all of that in case you had any doubts in the next few minutes. So there's four little bits to talk about. So London and its importance to global retailers. So what are they looking for? And why do they keep coming to London? The impact of the sort of tourism and how important the tourist is to the London market. A little bit about luxury as a location, and then some of their potential headwinds or opportunities we'll see over the next sort of year or so. So just some of those aforementioned numbers. That London competes on a global scale. It's not really London competing with Manchester or with Bracknell or with Reading. It really is about London competing with the New Yorks, the Hong Kong, Singapore's, Dubai's of this world. A couple of stats just to compare the three in general. So average house prices, the top line. I guess the interesting one, in the UK, the average property in London is around 9 times average salary, which is terrible, I guess. In Hong Kong, it is 30 times the average salary. So be glad you're not trying to buy a property in Hong Kong. Population's relatively similar. Really interesting stat, I think. So London has 16,100 ultra-high net worth individuals within 2 hours of London, as many as New York and Hong Kong together. So there's a huge pocket of wealth that travels to London to experience retail, both in terms of the shopping side of things and the food and beverage element. London, for the last 3 years, has been scored as the most important city to ultra-high net worth individuals, followed by New York, and Hong Kong has just slipped down to number 4, as Singapore's overtaken Hong Kong in the sort of top 3 rankings. So London, relatively affordable, a lot of people with a lot of money, and it's very, very important to those people. So what are we seeing? We do a global study each year, which is called How Global is the Business of Retail? And we look at the retailers that have opened up in each city in the world and the new retailers that have come to those places. So London was the second most important city in terms of new retailers opening up that haven't been seen in this country before. So 65 brand new retailers opened up last year, only topped by Hong Kong, with about 85 retailers opening up there. But way above the likes of, I think Paris is around sort of 36. So we're really at the sort of top of the European cities in terms of importance for new retailers. They sort of test in London, open in London. If it works here, then we'll expand elsewhere. And this is even more impressive when you bear in mind that London is already the most penetrated city globally in terms of international retailers. So we have the most international retailers, and we have more looking to open here than anywhere else. So it has a massive draw card for retailers looking to test themselves and looking to grow their business. So we asked a few questions about the coming year. What are their 5 sort of concerns going forward? Not necessarily about London, but generally within EMEA. So cost escalation, lack of quality retail space sort of came out quite high. So it really is a drive to want to be in the right location and have a real quality unit, and people will wait for that right property. Currency fluctuations coming down sort of quite low. We've seen currency moving around quite a lot for a variety of reasons in the last 12 months. But really around getting the right space in the right location is really one of the most important things to retailers looking at London. Then we asked, okay, where are you planning to open in the coming 12 months? So the last set was the previous 12 months. And the United Kingdom, and for that you can pretty much read London, is the most important market across EMEA. So more important than UAE, than France, than Germany, etc. The UK is the market that they anticipate opening up in the coming 12 months more than any other area. So this data was pulled at the end of 2016, sort of spring 2017. So past the sort of Brexit negotiations, past all that sort of stuff, very much around a real commitment to London, a real desire to want to be here for people that are looking to expand their retail operations. So how important is the tourist? So tourists spend a lot of money in London. We have, the top line is the number of overnight stays by city. So nearly 20 million nights are spent in London by tourists from outside of the city centre, more than New York and more than Hong Kong, almost as much as the two of them added together. The really interesting thing is how they spend their money. So in London, almost half, so 46% of the tourist money is spent on shopping, spent on retail in London. They come to London to shop. Compared to New York, it's only a quarter of it, and in Hong Kong, just less than a third. So the total spend in London by tourists, 20 billion, and of that, sort of circa 9, 10 billion is spent on shopping. So they're coming to London for those brands to engage with the best retail on offer, and they're spending the money in those stores. And forecasts from Oxford Economics suggest this is going to be even higher next year, so that London's going to pull away even more from the rest in terms of that desirability for the tourist. So London is also incredibly important for luxury retailers. So more luxury retailers opened new stores in London than anywhere else globally last year. And that's been pretty much the same story for the last 5 years. So there's new brands that weren't present in London a year ago opening up stores in London last year. So more than in New York, more than in Hong Kong, more than in Dubai, et cetera, et cetera. So the real passion for opening up those luxury stores in London. And I guess we've seen some challenges in the New York and Hong Kong market around the sort of rents sort of perhaps decreasing, levelling out, being some sort of closures that we've seen, sort of discussed in lots of the press. We haven't really seen that in London. The rents are still very attractive for retailers. There's still felt to be a bit of a headroom when you compare them to the rents being charged in New York and in Hong Kong. So we interviewed some consumers and talked to them. So why is it that London is so attractive? It is the language, the currency, the history. Over the last sort of 12 months, we've seen a benefit to customers coming to London with the sort of strength of the pound falling off a little bit. I know some of the Pew stores, Harrods record year, Selfridges record year, Harvey Nichols record year. The ability for customers to come in and get products at a 10, 20, 30% discount to a year ago is incredibly attractive. We have an improving transport infrastructure. It's getting easier to get to places, and that's improving dramatically. There are very defined retail locations. So yes, we have Bond Street, Regent Street, but yes, we have Covent Garden. Yes, we have Spitalfields. There are new retail locations opening up all the time, each of them having a very, very clear message that they're communicating to the customer and to the retail brand that's coming in. And we have probably the best supporting network, so probably the more five-star hotel rooms than any other city in the world. Great dining, incredible theatre, great events. And we have a real season of events in the UK and in London. So London really is a relatively easy choice for retailers looking for a natural expansion place to visit. So that was my 8 minutes. My final slide is just to look at some of the, some of the challenges. And I guess the biggest one is getting across to the public, the government, important people, how big retail is. So knocking on nearly £400 billion worth of money brought to the economy by retail. It's an incredibly important business, both in terms of an employer and in terms of a revenue generator. We have the sort of challenges, opportunities that online brings. And I'm sure that the role of the store will change over the next 5-10 years. The importance of having physical space won't change. We've seen lots of online retailers opening physical stores. They're recognizing the store as a brand ambassador. It's how you engage with the customer. It's how you give them the whole experience. It's not necessarily just about selling products anymore. Consumers are very fickle. We offer more. We always want more. So a real awareness and knowledge of what consumers expect and how you can change the brand offer, change a store to meet those expectations. And then life outside the EU. And personally, I believe it's a huge upside. And I think we just need to grasp what that looks like and take advantage of some of the developments that are taking place to mitigate some of the risks that leaving the EU brings us. So that's my few minutes, and I'll hand back to our chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. On to bring in our other panelists. There's lots of points there I think want to pick up on. John, I just wanted to turn to you. Obviously, you know, you have retail occupiers. What is tenant demand? Obviously, that implies that there's lots of demand out there. Retailers are kind of, you know, crawling over themselves to kind of get to London. As a landlord, how are you finding it? What's the demand like?
So just sort of very briefly, we're a British family-owned property business operating in around sort of 60 cities around the world. And actually sort of building on, you know, Andrew's point, we sort of feel that the West End is, you know, a huge opportunity, but it's also sort of facing some sort of threats in terms of enormous demand on its spaces, its infrastructure, and sort of fierce international competition. In terms of sort of demand levels at the moment, I think that we see that as, you know, sort of being very good. It is, in terms of our estate across Mayfair and Belgravia, we have around 1.75 million square feet of retail across sort of those two areas, which is around 525 units, representing about a third of the estate's total rental value. So in terms of sort of the sheer volume of our estate, kind of to kind of keep that demand level consistent is sort of good.
And a similar question to you, Eric. Obviously, based on all of that, how easy a sell is London to retailers? I mean, are they like just queuing up and you just pick and choose, or is it? I'm assuming it's a bit more complex than that.
I'm in a very privileged position to be acting for some top international brands. So some of the feedback may be slightly skewed because we have to have a store in London. There's no question, you know, leading city in the world. We must be in Bond, Sloane, Covent Garden. So there's always that urgency to ensure that we have the best position, the best configuration, the best rental deal. Other brands that come in are still playing with the game of, well, shall we open in Paris first, or shall we do Madrid, or shall we do Milan? And I'm talking about the ones, obviously, across the other side of the ocean. I do think there will be a sea change, and that's nothing to do with Brexit, by the way. But the fact of the matter is, from discussions with retailers that I've been having over the last few weeks, there is a huge concern about rates. You've heard it all before, so we don't need to rehearse that. The second concern is the internet. We've had that discussion. You all know you're all buying on the internet. You're not visiting the stores anymore. So that's a sad story. Unless you get back into the stores, we will lose some. Support your stores. The third point is one that was thrown at me the other day by a retailer, which really took me by surprise, and that is the rewards programs, which are pumped out on a regular basis by the department stores. And the individual retailers find that in the certain London streets very difficult to fight. Because let's face it, if Harrods are offering me 15, 20% off a Giorgio Armani jacket, I'm going to go to Harrods. I'm not going to go to Giorgio Armani and Sloane. And the same happens with Selfridges. And this is a growing factor. So what are some of the clients saying now? You know, do we really need a store in Knightsbridge when we can move into a safe haven called Harrods or Harvey Nicks, pay a concession turnover rent, no fixed lease, no fixed rent, it's movable. Should we do that? Is that a better deal? Because then we pick up on the rewards program. So I think that's another factor some of the landlords in central London need to think about.
Well, I just wanted to pick up on the cost, and it was actually something I was going to ask you, Andrew. At what point does it get too expensive? I mean, particularly given that bricks and mortar retail is competing with online.
Yeah.
Because from your presentation, it seems to imply that certainly the luxury end, it's not a factor. But for what Eric is saying, that it perhaps is it just different? Like at the luxury end, it doesn't matter, but maybe more so at the levels of retail.
Nobody wants to pay too much money for a property, of course they don't. And I think Eric's point around that they need a store in London, New York, Hong Kong, or Dubai, that they need to be there really. If you're a serious player in the luxury market and many other areas, not having a store in London is seen as a bit of a mistake. I think there's also it's probably not spoken about very much, that some of the individual stores themselves don't make a profit. they look at their whole ecosystem, look at how it generates sales to the online, how it generates sales to the department stores, the wholesale business, how it helps promote the brand's essence. And the stores themselves, I guess, are going to be used more and more in the future, I personally believe, as a marketing slash experience vehicle. So I think in that point, the money that you're paying for the rent for the store becomes quite a different conversation. So I don't think there is an absolute, it's 100 is too much, 95 is fine. I think it's just around what that store is looking to deliver to the brand becomes more important than the actual sales that go through that till.
Do you think it is then a case of being more choosy about where they locate and not maybe being so prolific, but actually maybe having one or two very specific locations?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a reliance on a strong flagship store and then look at opportunities in perhaps some quirkier, edgy areas to open similar store concepts, but not quite the same, that might align more regularly to that particular consumer that lives and works there.
I think we're sort of firmly seeing that trend sort of come through. We've actually recently done a deal with MatchesFashion.com on Mount Street, and they're a perfect example of where sort of technology and in-store, has to be, the two almost can't survive without the other. And that sort of relevance of technology being used in stores as much as sort of, being a sort of a platform for sort of sales generally.
I mean, one of the things I hear when I'm talking to people about retail outside London is it's all about creating an experience. It's not just about having the shops. Presumably, I mean, London ticks a lot of boxes because it has the experience. But you were saying about the tourists and the amount of spend. I mean, are they coming purely to shop, or are they coming to London because they want to do some sightseeing or they want to go to the theatre and they happen to be spending a lot of money?
I'm sure the percentage that come here just to shop, but the majority are coming here for a weekend, but a big part of that is the opportunity to shop. I know sort of friends that work at Global Blue, the sort of tax refund providers, they've never been as busy. You can see it at Heathrow, you sort of walk behind them, the huge snaking queues to claim out the tax. It's a massive sort of money saver. Well, the Chinese, sort of the Middle East, they are still coming here in droves. And we see my wife works at Harrods and Ramadan comes, much, much quieter. Eid comes, it picks up and sales sort of go through the roof again. So it very much is focused on, for some stores, some areas, what the tourism business is doing.
But I think it's also about creating a destination. We're in a very privileged position in that we can take a long-term view, but actually, we're having to work much harder to create those destinations. It's not just about shopping anymore. So in terms of creating that, food and beverage, creating gyms, really thinking cleverly about what are our anchors and not always assuming that it is an anchor department store, is certainly from a landlord perspective, working harder to sort of deliver those great experiences and those great destinations within London and ultimately the world.
I wanted to talk a little bit about independent and the niche retailers. Obviously, we talked about the high end and the brands, and there seems to have been a little bit, certainly in certain schemes, to sort of create something different by bringing in new names and not having the same old names. I mean, what role are independent retailers playing in London's retail scene?
We did some research a while ago talking about two things, I guess. One was the importance of food and beverage. And 7 out of 10 visitors will decide where to shop based on the quality of the food and beverage offer that's there. So they want to go out, and while they're out, they'll shop and eat and drink. Then a second thing was the prevalence of independence. They don't want a cookie-cutter approach, which I think is where the Grosvenor type business or a Cadogan or whatever can curate and manage the estate much, much better. When you have streets that are all individual landlords, they obviously have a overriding view about what's their store going to generate. But if you can actually curate the area and bring in independents, whether they have independent food and beverage, independent fashion retailers, it just helps give another reason to create a destination to bring people there. I think they're incredibly important.
Eric?
I think with the independent retailers that actually make shopping interesting, let's be honest, they need more flexibility than anyone else. They don't know whether this is going to come through for them in 3 years, 5 years, or 10. So they need break clauses or kick-out clauses or go dark clauses in their leases. That's not very popular with landlords. I understand why. It hits the valuation. There's a steady stream of them coming in. They tend to gravitate initially to East London because they read about the Spitalfields and the Shoreditches and they think it's a safe haven. And then you bring them back to the West End and they realise the potential in the West End and suddenly they all want to be here. So my sense is there would be more if we could be more flexible. And I mean, can we think about turnover rents again? Can we think about having softer service charges? Because that actually, you put an independent into a block that you own, and it makes it interesting. It becomes a destination. Matches, I live in Wimbledon Village. Matches started in Wimbledon Village. It is the most successful story in Wimbledon Village. Everyone goes there. And now you've planted them in Mount Street, and they're, of course, in Marylebone as well. Pure destination. That's what you need. They come from nowhere.
Joanna, how do you feel about independence? Obviously, as a landlord, you know, you're a business. You need to make money.
On the Grosvenor, the sort of the London estate, roughly, I think it's about 60-65% of our leases are actually to independents. So we would consider an independent with any sort of anyone that has less than sort of three stores. So, you know, some of those are in Belgravia, where sort of affordability is a little bit easier. And, you know, for example, on Elizabeth Street, we've recently done six deals. I think four of those have been to people either taking their very first or maybe second stores. And I think, you know, for us, it's all about balance. Again, we're in a very fortunate position that we're able to sort of take that long-term view. So therefore, we can kind of balance those longer lease lengths with that kind of slightly more flexible offer to kind of make sure that retail mix is interesting and sort of varied.
Would you consider turnover?
We do, yes. Yeah, I mean, certainly within our food and beverage leases, that's already pretty much a given with a base and then a turnover. And particularly sort of where in emerging destinations, then, you know, it's important that the landlord shares the sort of the pain and the sort of the benefit effectively of the sort of the turnover element.
I also wanted to ask, again, picking up on you talked about London having very defined retail locations. Is there anywhere that's kind of like you would sort of pick as up and coming as kind of like they're going to be the next sort of, you know, cool hit retail?
Eric's far cooler than him.
Eric, go on. Get your crystal ball out.
Difficult question, because obviously I'll end up promoting certain schemes that and certain landlords that we represent. It's always a question all the international retailers ask, what's up and coming? You know, I can tell you what's gone. And what's passed.
Where's gone?
And maybe that's where we should all be investing our money now, because that's going to come back.
So where has gone? Where should we be investing our money?
Okay, this is an Eric Eastman view, not a CBRE view. I would seriously start looking in and around where some of the Westfields are, because they've damaged the streets around the Westfields, and they are in a free fall at the moment. They will recover, and there's always a steady demand for them. So, you know, the obvious places like Westbourne Grove would be places to look at again. Whether we're at the bottom of the market yet, who knows? But there's an example. As I said earlier, most of the international companies all want to go over to Redchurch Street and explore that. It's beyond me. Mm-hmm. The pedestrian flow is so slow. They don't arrive by taxi even. Then it's, let's go and visit Hackney. There must be a good chance in Hackney. And you take them to the outlet in Hackney, and they see a lot of people buzzing around Burberry, and that's about it. So, you know, London is a very close and well-connected city. There isn't a spot now.
Okay. I wanted to kind of pick up on some of the sort of challenges, obviously, we've touched upon online and the need for a physical presence. But I was interested because you mentioned about loyalty schemes from department stores. Loyalty schemes from department stores. And is there, because I know there are various kind of retail associations, the West End Company. Do you think there's an argument for maybe having something that covers a lot of different retailers? You know, say you could have an Oxford Street loyalty card.
Well actually, the Crown did something a couple of years ago. And if there's anyone from the Crown here, they can correct me. But I'm pretty sure they did a deal where you could buy a loyalty card for £3 or £5, and you could use it in all the shops that are joined in the loyalty scheme and get an instant 10% off. Now, whether that still exists, I don't know. But it wasn't well executed. It wasn't well known. And I think that was a shame, because I think that would really help. But maybe Regent Street is so successful it doesn't need it. But I think other streets do need loyalty schemes, yeah.
I know, Johnny, you touched upon some of the technology that's being used. I mean, are you seeing any other sort of ways that retailers using technology to make that store experience different and more sort of inviting from people to get people off their sofa and away from the internet?
Incidentally, a group of us have literally come back from New York this morning, and we were in the Samsung store in Meatpacking while we were over there, and we had this fabulous sort of ride on a roller coaster, all kind of through 3D sort of virtual technology. And, you know, as a sort of a consumer, a Samsung store wouldn't necessarily be something that I would normally go into. But actually the kind of the influx of virtual sort of VR was probably the best, you know, one of the best sort of 20 minutes that we spent in having this, you know, amazing experience. And you kind of then sort of build that sort of brand affinity.
And they push the message that you can't actually buy anything in the store. It's just an experience store. It's just a adult's playground. So it's probably a hugely expensive investment for them. But actually that... discussion you just told 100 people here, yeah. It's in all the press, it just becomes Samsung pushing harder against the Apple thing. A more local example would be Sandals on the Fulham Road, so a high-end sort of travel store. You can go in there, try on the VR goggles, and literally wander around the beach in Barbados. You're going to be on holiday. They have all the wines there to sort of taste when you're in there. 55-inch screens all over the store. So they really brought technology to a very, I guess, static sort of magazine-type flicking through a travel brochure. They brought it to life, and they've noticed a real uplift in sales from doing that.
I mean, obviously, we've demonstrated that London is one of the top places in the world for retail. Does it lead the way in this sort of thing, or are there other cities that are doing it better?
Better. I don't know about better. I mean, I think the penetration is very similar in Dubai now, but it's an incredibly different experience. You can say that brand's there, but it doesn't tell a story at all, really. Shanghai. Similar sort of thing with massive scale, incredible investment, a real experience. But again, it's just not history. There's small streets, stumbling over independence. It's just a very different environment, really. So I think London is a relatively unique proposition.
I want to come on to, you mentioned about space and availability of space and demand. How does London solve that problem of providing the right sort of space? I mean, is it, as Eric said, that it's those areas that sort of maybe fallen behind.
We've been very fortunate because we've had a group of landlords who have enjoyed a rising rental market, so they've invested heavily in their buildings. And whether it's your portfolio or Cadogan's portfolio or the Crown or whoever, they've all done it. So the quality of the boxes or the rectangles that the retailers are taking is very high. The problem is, once that starts plateauing, is the investment going to continue? And that's the question, really. Covent Garden's done a fantastic job at reconfiguring some of its spaces as well in difficult grade 2, grade 1 listed buildings. So I hope it carries on, but that's going to be a big challenge. And if that becomes too much of a challenge, there is always this easy option of popping into a Westfield and opening up there instead, which guarantees you a brand new square box.
From our perspective, it's really about being flexible, so being able to sort of ensure that, you know, from the space that we're creating, we're sort of being flexible in terms of being able to kind of upscale it, make it smaller, and really be sort of very quick in responding to sort of those consumer demands. And similarly, you know, for example, in North Mayfair, particularly on the food and beverage side at the moment, we're sort of finding that small is beautiful. So we've got much more demand from those sort of smaller, sort of sub 1,500 square foot units, where restaurant operators are able to quickly change at lesser expense sort of throughout the sort of the duration of their lease, seems to be sort of much more popular. So I think it's having that variety and that flexibility to kind of react.
I know in recent years we've had some very high profile insolvencies from retailers. Is that still a concern, or does it offer an opportunity to free up much needed retail space if those retailers that are struggling go under?
I think it's very exciting, actually. It's always disappointing when a traditional brand like BHS disappears, but you've all read in the press what Days are doing already, and we've suddenly got a new department store operator with some decent names, Jaeger, Austin Reed, represented inside it. So, no, I think it's very positive news when that happens. I mean, BHS, all the variety stores, Littlewoods, BHS, the, dare I say, even Marks and Spencers, have lost their way. And a new generation has to come in and take over. So I think it's a very positive thing. I'm disappointed because it has staffing issues. It means people lose salary. It's very tragic on a personal side. But no, I think we should turn the page and say it's good news.
I think none of the retailers have got a right to be successful. I mean, if you walk around the stores of retailers that have closed, it's not typically that difficult to understand perhaps why they've closed. Whether it was Woolworths back in the day that just tried to pack everything and anything into stores, we'll just sell more and more stuff and that'll get us through it. Or a BHS that didn't really have a clear vision of who its customer was. So you've got to keep adapting. So the landlords are doing it. So the retailers can't sort of sit back. They need to keep changing, I think. And new brands are looking to exploit that, which is a good thing, I think.
We've talked about tourist spend, and obviously the weak pound at the moment plays into their favour, gives them more spending power. What about domestic shoppers? How big is a proportion of they in London's overall retail spend, and what does the pound being weaker have on them? With presumably, what inflation's rising as well, is that a worry?
I think people are looking at it, haven't had to look at it before. So the Bank of England voted today, and it was 5-3 in terms of sticking with the current interest rates, and people thought it was going to be 7-1. So actually, there's potentially more likely to be an interest rate rise this year, early next year, than we perhaps thought. Inflation's 2.9%, which is our sort of the worst-case scenario for towards the end of this year. But if you walk around most retail environments, whether it be Wimbledon Village or whether it be Richmond or whether it be central London, they're really busy. People are still out there buying stuff. You hear about we're at peak stuff now. Nobody needs any more things. You're going to buy experiences. And yes, they want an experience, but they're still leaving there with shopping bags full of products. So I think people see retail as part of what they do now. It's a leisure activity. I think there are relatively low entry points to relatively high price brands, and that people can engage and get a sense of well-being by shopping, I think. So I don't think there's as much fear as perhaps some of the headlines you might read today or tomorrow might suggest, personally.
And I don't know, I want to mention, obviously, there's been some terrible terrorist attacks happening. There was a report this week that the Merlin Group has seen visitor numbers down at some of the key London attractions, and I'm wondering if it's having an impact on retail as well, if there are fewer visitors, maybe slightly worried about you know, security. And is that a short-term thing? Will that kind of come back?
I think it's too early to say whether we're now marked as a city. I actually don't believe it is true. I think we've already bounced back, and we take this very British approach, let's just get on with it and carry on. And certainly when I talk to Italians and the French and even the Americans, they're quite relaxed still about coming here. This is a pretty safe place to be. Just be streetwise. So I don't think it's having an impact.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because there was quite an impact on Paris. So we saw a lot of the footfall potentially from Paris came to London last year. Luxury sales, they're moving stock from Paris to London. And I just think London, we've always had issues, whether it be from the sort of the Irish issue back in the sort of 70s, 80s. And it's seen as being a city that's ahead of the curve in terms of security measures. So hopefully nothing else ever happens again anywhere globally. But I think people don't have that in mind in London. You go to Borough Market tonight and it'll be packed. I was on London Bridge the day after the sort of car went, literally the day after it. And it was, you've got to move for people. I just don't think it comes into the psyche in that way.
Okay, I've got some more questions, but I wanted to give a chance for people to ask questions from the floor before I carry on. Has anybody got any questions from the floor at this stage? Any questions? Nope, okay, I'll carry on. Okay, so we've talked about the cost to retailers. We've talked about the cost of shopping for whether it's tourists or domestic. What about the cost for the workers, the people who work in the shops, of living and working in London? We've got stagnation in wages. Housing costs are going up and up. How much of a concern is that for retailers? And in terms of being able to get the stock, be able to get people to come and work in their shops?
I mean, as a sort of a London landlord, we pay very close attention to sort of who is sort of residing in our upper floors, from both a, you know, be it a resident, be it an office worker. They are, you know, part of the fabric of sort of making a place, you know, kind of work and exciting and interesting and kind of creating that footfall. So certainly within our sort of estate and tenant mix sort of strategy, we are making sure that we provide that sort of level of amenity which is required to sort of service those office workers and residents, because without it, you know, they will go elsewhere.
Eric, you're nodding along there.
No, I'm a property man. I don't really know about this sort of thing, so...
But what are the retailers saying? I mean, for example, talking to, we've got Westgate opening in Oxford. It's a big concern for them because Oxford has very high house prices. And they are. That's one of the things they hear is from retailers, is that we're worried about whether we're going to be able to get enough staff to come and work in our shops because they can't afford to live in Oxford and they don't want to commute in a long way for a shop job, essentially. So that's the reason for the questioning. Is it something you're hearing from retailers?
It's never discussed. Honestly, it is never discussed. It's one of those areas that we don't touch upon, so I'd rather not comment on it. But my clients always have their stores fully staffed, so they magic them from somewhere. Where? I don't know. But
What about in terms of labour, what about Brexit from that point of view? If there is a restriction on the movement of labour, is that potentially more of a concern?
Well, I think what's happening is they're training their staff to a very high level now, and they are able to cope with fewer people. A lot of the shoppers come in knowing exactly what they want because they've seen it on the net, so it's a very specific purchase. They can book through a VIP service an appointment, and they're finding that we don't need 8 members of staff. We can get by with 5. And then your Oxford example, if we can't get the staff at Westgate Oxford, we'll borrow them from Bicester just down the road, who are so highly trained, they'll be ace in Oxford. So retailers find a solution. It's not an issue.
No, and I think there was a report in New Scientist last week that suggested by 2023, artificial intelligence will be able to do the job of any sales associate. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen in luxury stores, whatever, but I think technology is developing at such a rate, certainly in the F&B industry, with automated servers, with automated sort of back kitchen staff that are taking away the need for lots of these repetitive tasks to be carried out by a person that's on the living wage or whatever. So I think technology will start to develop at such a rate that it won't be such an issue anymore.
Any more questions before I... Oh, we have a question. Hang on, if you just wait for the microphone. Someone's coming.
Thank you. Thanks. Obviously, we've got Heathrow in 2025 that's going to be open. We've got Crossrail opening very shortly, which is going to increase capacity up by 10% overnight. What research, if any, has been done in terms of what is that 10% increase in capacity from Crossrail going to do to retail sales? And, you know, particularly the fact that it's 86 kilometres long, so it's going to be able to bring a lot of people into London and get them back home. What impact is that going to have?
I mean, I'm not sure if you've done the research, but there's certainly a belief that the Crossrail itself will have a huge impact on the West End. It's much easier to get there, much easier to go between different destinations. So there certainly is a suggestion between a 10 to 30% uplift in footfall over the next sort of 2 years once it opens. So absolutely, the connectivity is all important, whether it's getting people to work, better hours, or being a 24-hour tube, Crossrail, better bus services, and getting their customers in and out of the locations.
Any other questions from the floor? No, okay. I just wanted to kind of round up by just getting you all to give your view on what the best thing is about London retail and what will kind of drive it forward, and perhaps one challenge, one of the kind of the key challenges that it needs to kind of make sure that it addresses. going forward?
I'll give you guys time to think. So I think for me, it's the absolute choice. So no matter what I want to buy from anywhere in the world, I can find it within a relatively small block of land in London. And I love that, whether it's for me and the children, whether it's my wife, my sort of parents, friends that come from overseas. The actual choice in London is it just cannot be beaten. I think the challenge for me still is around the variety of food and beverage offers. So I still find myself going out at lunchtime and typically coming back with the same type of offer. So I think there's a big opportunity still for F&B to up its game in London.
I think from our side, probably similar in terms of sort of the diversity, but not just from a shopping perspective, actually from the cultural attractions, the museums, the art galleries, all of the sort of the culture that sort of generally goes on that really sort of helps drive the interest in our diversity and the support of the sort of the retail and the food and beverage. And then in terms of the challenges, I think it's ensuring that certainly we as a landlord are continuing to be sort of adaptable, open to change, integrated and kind of, you know, open and available.
I think the most exciting thing for me is at two ends of the spectrum. You've got the rise and power of the factory outlets coming through, and we've got a few around London, and they still do exceptional business and they stock very high-end brands. And there's always a great discount. So that's a growing industry, whether we like it or not. And at the other end, I'm very excited that the department stores have resurrected themselves, and they are the powerhouses right at the moment. And that's great, because 10 years ago, we were talking about the death of the department store. So that is a huge attraction for our tourists. As you've all traveled the world, you go into some of the other continental department stores, and they're nowhere near as good as ours. And the Americans seem to be suffering at the moment as well with their department store. So I think that those are the two ends of the spectrum I'm looking at. On a personal note, I would like to say with landlords, if we could only be more flexible, because we've got this terrible danger of making all our streets and all our retailers look the same. And those of you who know me well, I've heard it 100 times, but if we can have the opportunity of putting our own fascias and our own branding and make them significant and stand out. And I know we've got planning lobbies holding us back and designers and architects, but it does become very samey. And the retailers really feel that they need to do something exceptional these days, exceptional to draw customers in. So I would really encourage landlords, whoever you are, to try and be as flexible as possible.
Okay, so, well, as long as Andrew gets some better variety of sandwich shops. It
yes.
Looks like the picture for London is fairly rosy, a bit more flexibility. Looks like it's all fairly in balance. So unless there's any more questions from the floor before we finish up, final chance. Okay, well, I'm going to round things off and say thank you very much to our panellists, and thank you all for coming along and listening.